Now, over the next 2 weeks, we'll be studying this Vajracchedaka Prajnaparamita Sutra, the Diamond Sutra. What I hope will happen is that we won't simply be studying it, but I hope that we'll be living in it, living it. For it seems to me that the sutra is about life. It's about all life. All life is in the Diamond Sutra. It's about our lives. It's about the lives of others. It's about the life of the world, the life of the cosmos, the life of Buddhas, the life of Bodhisattvas, the life of all beings, the life of all things. That's actually what the sutra encompasses. It's a very short sutra, but it's an extraordinarily rich sutra. It's very dense, very compact. It just throws out classic Buddhist language, technical language. So it assumes a lot of knowledge, a lot of understanding already in its use of technical language, and then it does things with that technical language, does things to it, to them. And it's rather baffling as well. It starts off reasonably straightforwardly. I say reasonably. There seems to be some sort of orientation in the opening chapters dealing with the Bodhisattva's path to Buddhahood. But then it seems to kind of fragment and seems to treat things in a very miscellaneous way. Edward Conter himself was really baffled by it, and his attempts at writing a commentary on the second part of the sutra, he didn't publish originally because he was just so kind of just sort of frustrated, I guess, with it, and felt dissatisfied with it. In the later editions of Buddhist wisdom books, they've included it as an appendix, and he's not even sure himself whether the various traditional commentators are really making sense of what's going on. There has been a commentary produced by, which you can get in one of the Chan and Zen teaching series. Master Han Chan's commentary on the Diamond Sutra, where he sees the sutra as dealing with doubts, Subhuti's doubts, many of them unspoken. And that what the Buddha is doing is cutting through these doubts to reveal the diamond mind, the Vajra mind of the Buddha. I won't be following that commentary. I won't be following any traditional commentary in my presentation. I'm going to just take the sutra as I find it and, maybe refer to things as they arise. But, sort of engaging in it in my own way, in our own way. There is some discussion about the second part of the sutra, where it kind of breaks up, repeats itself, goes back on itself. Some scholars think, well, maybe a scribe has mixed up the pages and, got things out of order. Maybe it's actually two versions of one sutra. It's one of those sort of scholarly enterprises that they love, speculating about. Has it just all, an accident of history that it's come to us in this way? It doesn't actually matter. It doesn't actually matter how the sutra has come down to us. There's a message in it either way, whether there's a kind of method in the sutra itself, in the compilers of the sutra, or whether there's been some terrible mistake, an error, and you've just actually got a sort of a collection of miscellaneous pages on the perfection of wisdom that was given this fancy title, and that somehow became very in vogue. It doesn't actually matter. Because there's a message in however it's come down to us.